This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, a couple things here real quick before we get into a little draft talk for Friday. We're going to do Acknowledge Me at 7:20-ish, thereabout. And that will be part of this segment. We've kind of shifted the clock around a little bit. You guys know we do a long segment normally from about 7:45 through 8:20. We've kind of shifted the clock around. It turns out there's... the numbers tell us there's more of you in your cars between 7 and 7:45, so we want to try to serve as big an audience as possible. So we are going to go straight through here till about 7:37
each day. During COVID, everything shifted later. It's taken 2 years for everything to normalize kind of back to like, oh, people are getting in their cars and going to the office.
Normal time again, yeah.
Their bosses made them go to the office.
That's right.
Because they were lonely.
Yep.
Take care of your lonely bosses, everybody.
That's right.
So, they're like, why did I get to this station in life if I can't see the minions I lord over?
I know. I earned this.
Yes.
I earned the chance to stand in an ivory tower and watch them sweat.
Why can't I? If I can't, they need to see me leaving to go play golf every afternoon.
Yep, they need to
Otherwise,
know.
Otherwise, what's it all worth
they
anyway?
They need to know. So I say that to say we'll do Acknowledge Me at 7:20. We're going straight on through to 7:37. So that quick note, quick reminder that the draft, and we'll segue into this now, the draft begins Thursday. We'll carry it here on Sports Radio 610. You'll have Texans Radio for round one. And then round two, which is when things start popping for the Houston Texans, that'll be on Friday. Coverage will include one Seth C. Payne, along with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris on Friday.
At the draft party.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Should be a good time.
That's going to be there's a lot of the fun thing about the second third rounds is that, especially by the time you get to the third round, got to jostle the old memory every now and then when a team takes somebody. Yeah, you know, you have to be sure you get your bullet points right. But when we're out there at the party, there's there's distractions.
There are.
I don't know if I can be bothered jostling my memory when there's people to jostle out there.
You've got John Harris with you. You'll be just fine.
Little Wikipedia.
That's Lean on Johnny time. Hell no, yeah, problem. It is. Yeah, and he loves it. He loves it. Nobody better. All right. So here was Nick Caserio last Thursday on Texans All Access, talking about what watching the first round will be like this year.
I mean, we'll still kind of go through our process. So there's probably 15 or 20 players that you know are going to go. And then if you get to a point, you know, if there's an opportunity that you feel makes sense that you want to get back into the first round, then we'd have to weigh the cost benefits of potentially doing that. But I think it goes back to just knowing as many players as possible, kind of a range of, you know, where you think they may fall. And it's just relying on the information that you have. And there's a myriad of mocks that are available. Some are probably a little bit more accurate than others. But again, you're really just kind of adjusting and reacting to what's going on and kind of take an inventory. And then you're looking ahead to Friday if we don't pick on Thursday, which right now we're not scheduled to. But by the same token, if you get to a point where you feel like there's a player maybe that's standing out and you think that it's worth making the move, then if we were to do that, what's the cost associated with that? So we're in a decent position. You know, if we don't do anything, we're hopeful that we'll get, you know, two or three quality players on Friday. If we do have an opportunity on Thursday that makes sense, it'd be something for us to consider and discuss and ultimately just try to make the right decision at the present time.
Seth, we'll get to what Friday could look like in a second. The part there where Nick kind of alluded to the potential of moving into the first round on Thursday night, Now we know nobody's more fluid than Nick Caserio when it comes to this stuff. He's reacting to a lot of things that are happening in the draft. If you had to guess, do you think if there is a mindset they're going into Thursday night with, is it a mindset that we're probably going to lay back and pick in the second round? Or do you think that there's a mindset that they're going to be kind of aggressively trying to get back up into the first round?
Well, no, I think the mindset is they're going to – like everything he just said right there, I think you can take it face value, including the part of the mock drafts. It might be a surprise to some people that NFL teams monitor the mock draft. And they don't do it because they think any given one is going to tell you exactly what happens. But the group consensus over time tends to be somewhat accurate. So, obviously it's never – completely accurate.
Data point. Yeah.
But they get a feel for, like, okay, the guys that are always going in the top 15, the guys that are always going in the top 20, the guys that are always going in the first round. And then every team has their own board. You know, there's no one universal board. And a lot of times, okay, guys that you might have ranked pretty high, it turns out, okay, this year, not as many teams seem to be all that eager to take that guy. So yeah, this guy's falling down our board. Like, I think that where Nick is right now, he probably feels like, yeah, given the way we've looked at everything, it's likely that it's going to make the most sense for us to be in the second round.
Yeah.
But if all of a sudden, maybe for whatever reason, a bunch of wide receivers aren't being taken in the first 15 picks, or if all of a sudden some of the really good offensive linemen are falling, even though, you know, the Texans don't need a tackle necessarily, but if there's somebody that they really like and they're all falling way down, then there's a chance perhaps that they move up.
Yeah, I expect them to sit round one out, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
But I think you're spot on, and I think what Nick's saying is true. Like, if an opportunity presents itself, he's not just gonna not trade into the first round because they moved the draft party to Friday. Let's just put it that way, right?
Yeah, and I think that I think the biggest thing it might be Brock Bowers would be the only guy that, for whatever reason, if he was falling, that's the one guy I think, okay, yeah, yes, they have Dalton Schultz, but there's zero reason not to want more weapons at tight end, especially a younger guy.
Yeah.
So somebody like that falling, I think, might tempt them. But it would be also, like, it would be a pretty aggressive move to get back up into the first round for somebody that's probably not going to – I mean, that would be a move way up.
Yeah.
And it's unlikely, and yet these things happen.
So the Texans have – they've got their two second-round picks, 42 and 59th overall. They've got the 86th pick overall in the third round. And then on day three, which you can hear on Sports Radio 610 with me and John Harris for the first 4 hours, and I believe Vandy and Johnny after 3 o'clock, they've got 2/4, 2/6, and 2/7 as of right now. Now, look, if history tells us anything with Nick Caserio, not only is he probably not going to stay put in rounds two and three, but he's probably going to use at least a few of those day three picks as his currency to move around in. Whatever list you're looking at right now, the Texans draft pick, don't fall in love with it. Because history tells us it is going to change on draft weekend.
Sean, I did pretty well on my SAT math back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to brag about it, but just as a matter of establishing some credibility.
Yeah.
For people who might otherwise only hear me try to do math at 6:15 a.m. when it's just when only the language centers in my brain are working. But this is what I know. Nick's first draft, 2 trades. Nick's second draft, 4 trades.
Yep.
Nick's third draft, 8 trades.
Yes.
I think it's pretty obvious we're going to have 16 trades in this
16
draft.
Oh, yeah.
I can do the pattern, Sean.
Oh,
I do.
Yeah.
I know the...
Times two.
Times two. Yeah.
16 trades. His history is he does move to get the guys he wants. He's drafted 23 players, and I think only 5 of the 23 have been with actual picks that the Texans had going into draft night. You know,
yeah, we're living on just everything gets. This is just currency. Like, he looks at the trade picks like it's currency, and you're trading up, you're trading down. You got whatever the exchange rate is, and boom, there you go. Yeah, he's not married to or emotionally attached to any of these picks.
Right, right. Like, he is very open about the fact that the evaluations are far from perfect. Like, he would rather give up. Swings on day three to maximize the probability on day two. Just real quick, He's drafted seven players on day two in the three drafts that he's had so far. Okay, so he drafted two in 2021, three the next year, and then two last year. Of those seven players, only two were picked with the Texans pick like that they came into the night with.
Yeah.
Davis Mills, his very first pick as GM back in 2021. And then Jalen Petrie at the 37th overall pick in 2022. Nico Collins, he traded a couple picks to move up for. John Mechie, he traded two fourth-round picks to move up spots to go get. Christian Harris traded a day three pick to move up five spots to go get. And then last season, both of his day two picks, Juice Scruggs and Tank Dell, he traded a few picks to move up some spots. He moved up six spots to get Juice Scruggs, traded a sixth and a seventh, moved up four spots to go get Tank Dell, traded a fifth and a sixth to do that. I would say these, most of them, other than the Mechie trade, still the jury's out on, but I would say most of these trades look like he went and got some pretty good players with them. Here's the irony, and here's the illustration of just like how you can't get too worked up about giving up sixth and seventh round picks. One of the seventh round picks, he gave up a sixth and a seventh last year to move up six spots to get Juice Scruggs. One of the seventh round picks was used to take current Houston Texan Nick Broeker. So the guy that the Bills used that pick on that they traded to get Juice Scruggs wound up on the Texans anyways, because that's what happens with seventh round picks.
They pick them up on waivers.
They wind up on the waiver wire. Yeah. So, it's, I just thought that was kind of ironic.
Is that his rookie year? That was last year.
That was last year.
I think like I know a lot of people want the Texans to draft a defensive lineman. Where they sit right now at 42, this is seemingly, you know, as Nick says, they monitor the mock drafts and what have you. There's so many defensive tackles that are like these 295 to 303 pound dudes who have athletic ability and pass rushing ability, might not necessarily be complete studs versus the run, but like, potentially Johnny Newton falls into the second round, but Braden Fisk, Chris Jenkins, Michael Hall Jr., Ruka Rohororo. It's a Rohororo. It's three rows, Sean. Like, these guys are all, I could see all of them being second rounders, and for good reason. I feel like that's one of the reasons the Texans feel comfortable being in the second round instead of the first, that they might not have, you know, Byron Murphy is the leader in the clubhouse in terms of a guy that's almost definitely going to get drafted in the first round. Kid out of Texas. But Johnny Newton is the one there where the Texans might, you know, maybe the Texans have him as the next best defensive tackle, but I could also see them having Braden Fisk or Chris Jenkins or any of these other guys rated above Johnny Newton. So I feel like the Texans are going to use one of those second round picks either by trading or using it with it on a defensive tackle.
Yeah, I feel they're not going to stay at 42 and 59. I feel pretty strongly about that. And yeah, defensive tackle. That was the other name when you brought up Brock Bowers earlier in this segment.
Yeah.
Like if he started to slip, Byron Murphy was the other name that I thought too. Like, all right, because I think a lot of people thought he wouldn't be there at 23 if the Texans were at 23. Like if that guy slips into the mid 20s.
Right,
depending
right.
on what their evaluation is on him, obviously, but that feels like a name that they might go get in the first round if he starts to slide.
His average projection right now is to go 18th overall, and yeah, originally people were thinking top 10 with him originally, except that it turned out to be such a strong offensive draft that. But again, that's all a projection. It's anything could happen.
Yeah, I think other than Will Anderson, who they traded a second and a first to go get. I think the message is like, yeah, he's cool. Nick's cool trading day three picks. You know, those are lottery scratch-offs, basically.
Yeah.
To move up from 42 to like 26 and get somebody, now you're talking about trading a second in the future or something like that.
And it's, probably. Yeah, and it's not as simple that you just get back. You know, you can't just execute the same trade you did with the Vikings.
That's right.
It's all the further you get up and try to trade into the first round, that's where the math gets a little screwy.
I think one thing to keep in mind, too, if we're talking about, and we're talking right now about Nick Caserio, we're going to do Acknowledge Me in about five or six minutes here. I think the other thing to keep in mind, too, Seth, I read an article this weekend in The Athletic, and it talked about how so many guys that would normally be coming out for the draft are opting to stay in school because they're making a lot of NIL money.
Yeah.
They use Iowa as the example. Like I guess a bunch of the Iowa kids.
Defensive players.
Yeah. Not offensively. There's nobody from Iowa offensively.
They've got a really good defense this year, and they all met before their their bowl game.
Yeah, they sat down. Yeah. They had a sit down and they you know tried to figure out, okay, what are we going to do here, guys? Are we going pro or are we sticking around? The only one that decided to go pro was Cooper DeJean, who's the only first rounder out of all of them. The rest decided to come back to school. So at its peak, underclassmen announcing they're going into the NFL draft a couple years ago at its peak was 130 kids announcing we're coming out for the draft. Boy, that is a big shot in the arm for the talent pool. There's only 58 this year. So the thought process is that day three is going to be considerably weaker. At some point, this whole thing will adjust. You know, and it'll
part,
be balanced
part
out
of
again.
It's all the guys with their extra year of COVID. This is the last year of extra COVID eligibility.
There's
too,
that, too.
So
yep.
There's a lot of older guys. Just there's going to be older guys in the draft. There's going to be, it's shifted the demographics of it a little bit.
So the end result is that day three this season is, according to the scouts, is weaker than most any other day three that we've seen. That's another reason I could see Nick moving fourth, sixth, and seventh round picks. It's like, all right, well, these are the, you know, like, these aren't your classic fifth, sixth, and seventh round guys. I can probably get some of these guys undrafted, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, like you said, that'll swing back around as the kids start graduating out. So there'll be fewer underclassmen. I think that's ultimately good for the NFL. I think that if you got an extra year of film on guys, they've matured in advance an extra year, that you should start getting rookies, even though it might be a little bit of a deficit last year and this year. You're going to start getting rookies that are really way more advanced than they had been forever. Yeah, the part that was surprising to me was they basically threw out in that article that, for an average starter, the NIL money at a lot of schools is probably around $200,000. And the difference is that that's guaranteed, unlike you get drafted in a late round or go as an undrafted rookie free agent. If you make the team, you might make a couple hundred thousand dollars if you make it the entire season. So a lot of these guys that are, you know, projected to be late rounders, they're just flat out saying, well, okay, well, I can maybe, I say I get a guaranteed couple hundred thousand dollars and I improve my chances, theoretically, get better and get drafted higher next year.
You improve, you get your degree, you know, that matters to some of these guys.
Yeah.
You get to hang out with your buddies for another year. Mm-hmm. Which matters to some of those guys. Like that. Yeah.
Well, if it's making $200,000, I like where I am. Or I could go somewhere where I don't know if I'm even going to make the team. And it's one of those. I mean, we speculated or wondered whether this would happen, whether it would result in this, but you just never know. This is so far one of the good things about NIL is that it might ultimately be better for the product of college football.
Yeah.
Because more guys, more upperclassmen are staying in.
They are.
And then it might be better for the NFL because they're going to be able to get a better look at guys and evaluate them better.
Yeah, it's not happening, not surprisingly, it's not happening with the upper crust guys. Those guys are still going pro. But you're right. Like, it's stabilizing the back end of a lot of college rosters. In an age where there's complete instability due to the transfer portal, at least now some schools with their upperclassmen, you know, once they're probably at an age where they're not getting into the portal or they've already been in the portal once, that they're at least, you know, the good schools are being able to count on guys staying for 4 years.
You know what? I don't think I've heard C.J. Stroud asked this question, and maybe he has been, but his decision to actually enter the draft, remember, it came right down to the wire.
Very late.
And people were wondering whether, man, Ohio State and their collective may have put together a huge NIL package. And at that point, you know, who knows exactly. This was well before all the S2 stuff and everything. But he waited until the last day to put himself into the draft. I don't think he would have answered, you know, he probably wouldn't have given a transparent answer last year during all the commotion and everything. I wonder if now, if he's asked, like, okay, what was going on there? Was like, how close was the money?
Yeah.
Let's be sure to either us or somebody else ask him that the next time he's at the podium.
Okay. How close was the money to have you come back to Ohio State boy for him? That would have had to have been a big check.
But I think that was probably what they really wanted to, you know, at that point, it wasn't a slam dunk that early in the process that he was going to be a top three pick. You never know exactly. You probably wanted to dot all the I's and cross all the T's on their due diligence to be sure.
Yep.
Yeah, it would. So for $40 million guaranteed versus, what's the most you think he would have been offered?
NIL, probably.
Yeah, Ohio State.
Yeah, under $10 million probably. And here's why I say that, Seth, because I remember a quote from Ryan Day, his coach at Ohio State. when NIL first became a thing, like a year into it, I remember Ryan Day saying, hey, man, I need $13 million to keep my roster together, you know, going into the offseason. So that included everybody, including and he even said, like, quarterbacks are $2 million, offensive linemen are $700,000, some, you know.
Yeah, but that was at the very beginning when there was no, like, they didn't have all this structure established and everything. And I feel like Shedeur Sanders made $4.7 million at a no place school just based off of the power of his.
Right, no, which is why I said under $10 million. Like I said, it'd definitely be more than the $2 million Ryan Day was talking about at the beginning of that thing. But Ohio State is a school that probably did just that. Like they've been on the NIL thing from the get go. They probably did send everybody back to sharpen their pencils and try to bring CJ back especially when you watch Kyle McCord play for them this past year at quarterback. You know, So there you go. Going to be fireworks on day two. Nick Caserio, book it.
Hey, everyone. Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us, and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
All right, let's get to it. Let's acknowledge some of the big performances. Not many, really not any big Houston performances from over the weekend. I would have loved to. Maybe, you know what? I'll give a little side acknowledgement to Justin Verlander.
Acknowledge
for coming
me.
Back, pitching well on Friday, and giving the team a kick in the ass on Wednesday that lasted for a day. And then they blew Saturday and they sucked on Sunday. So we'll get to the real acknowledgments here. I want to acknowledge, for the second straight week, Nick Caserio is getting acknowledging the general manager of the Houston Texans. We acknowledged him last week because it was our first chance to do that since the Stephon Diggs trade. This week, I want to acknowledge him for his saucy demeanor at his pre-draft press conference last week.
Yeah, people took note.
Yeah.
It was a different version of Nick Caserio that we've seen. It looked like he's kind of just, I think he was fed up with all of the flowers that people are throwing at the Texans for basically not doing anything other than just signing people and, you know, like, I think he's one that's seen too many times the people that win the offseason go in and have disappointing results. So I just went back just to be sure that it wasn't an errant thought, and it was quite a few moments he had. He had quite a few moments.
We've got a montage here of said moments. Here is a medley of Nick Caserio from his pre-draft press conference.
You know, I'm sure we'll get some questions here about the offseason and some of the things that we've done. I mean, frankly, it's kind of laughable. I mean, it's so early. I mean, we haven't done anything. Yeah, I think anything that's said outside the building is just noise. Draft grades, right? I mean, it's the most ridiculous concept that I've ever heard of. Like, we can talk about all we want about what's going on, what the expectation is. Quite frankly, it doesn't really matter. We're not for everybody. Everybody's not for us, and that's okay. Yeah, I mean, look, I don't really know what that means. I mean, what, Devin Singletary, was that not like a big enough name last year, I guess? Yeah, number one, I don't even know what that definition means. So if someone can define that for me. Excited to have stuff here, and, you know, when he gets here, I mean, certainly he's, you know, he'll be available, you know, maybe ample time for you all to visit with him. So, like, we're not, you know, sign a free agent, you know, bring a jersey up here and, like, do a big powwow. Like, that's not how we operate. Like, we don't believe in that.
Is there another way that we're supposed to do it?
No, I'm asking.
We're not trying to be difficult. I know that's what everybody thinks. I'm sure you guys can have some fun with that next week. So, all right.
All right, thanks.
And we are. Having some fun with it.
We did. Yeah, we had fun with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It
was, Ben, you went with the Curb music underneath him on that? I thought you'd go with some saucy death metal music, given the chippiness of Nick Caserio.
He was, a lot of it. Well, the biggest thing was that I was kind of surprised by was him saying that we don't have a press conference, you know, and bringing a guy jersey up here and everything. Like, I feel like they've done press conferences with free agents before,
they
right?
They did one with Danielle Hunter 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And Joe Mixon.
I was happy because it really was. It felt like just an old school football guy who's just sick of, like, the whole celebrating – celebrating anything that happens in the offseason when it doesn't actually involve wins or anything. He's just gotten disgusted with it. He's gotten disgusted with the entire machine and the year-round media force that the NFL has become.
I was hoping someone would push back on the "we don't do that" kind of thing. Like, well, you just did it 2 weeks ago, and then Nick could go, "Yeah, starting now, we don't do that." So that was.
I'd like to hear from Stephon Diggs. I don't know. I just, like, there's part of me that just.
I would too.
It's not a deal breaker or anything. It's just, it would be nice to see the new toy at some point.
I would too. Cal McNair and Hannah McNair did a sit down with several different members of the media a week or so ago, talking about a variety of things with different. They talked about the Astrodome. They talked about the uniforms. A lot of stuff. This was a fun exchange with Will Kunkel of Fox about how much fun it was beating the Titans in while they were wearing Oiler uniforms last year. And I'm really it's more Hannah that we're acknowledging than Cal here, so we'll acknowledge Cal. They make a great team because Cal gives the politically correct answer, and then Hannah comes swooping in with like a foreign object off the top rope and just smashes a chair over people's heads. Here is the answer to how much fun it was beating the Titans while they were wearing Oiler uniforms last
year. It's always fun to win.
A little bit more fun that day, a little bit more special, especially when a cowboy hat came out on the head coach.
Well, it's always special to win, especially ASC
South. Come on,
Cal.
Let's have some fun here. Give the fans what they want.
We love to win. We love to win, and so that one's right up there with some of our favorite wins.
I think Houston liked that game a lot, especially winning that game there while they were wearing something that Houston takes a lot of pride in. And, you know, Tennessee doesn't care as much. It's not as meaningful to their fans as we saw in a survey 20 or so years ago when they did change to the Titans. The Oilers didn't mean as much to the Titans fans. But so to win there meant a lot to Houston as they were shoving that in our face.
As they were shoving that in our face.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, like was Mike Vrabel when he got paraded out in his little cowboy outfit with his vest and his hat.
You make
like
him,
Amy Adams Strunk dressed him up like a doll.
I like, you make him sound like Woody from Toy Story.
He did. Amy Adams Strunk was like, come on in here, Mike. Come on in here, Mikey.
Yeah.
We're gonna dress you up, okay, big boy? And Mike was like, I don't wanna.
No, and we're gonna put.
And she's like, no, you get in here. And then I'm gonna embarrass you, and then I'm gonna fire you.
That's right.
Yeah,
oh,
get in here and wear your cowboy outfit.
They fired him 3 weeks later. Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
She says, you are a bad boy. Yeah. I dressed you up. Oh. I dressed you up like a cowboy, and this is what you did.
Yeah.
You lost to Case Keenum.
Oh my God. That's great. That is great. A quick programming note, Cal and Hannah McNair in studio with In the Loop tomorrow at 11 o'clock. The uniform drop is on social media tomorrow at 10 a.m., so keep an eye out for that. And I hope to see many of you out at the uniform reveal party on Tuesday night. Okay, let's get to this one. Trent Baalke.
Acknowledge me!
Jacksonville Jaguars general manager. This is a bold, brazen move right here. I got to acknowledge this move in his pre-draft press conference. Take a listen.
Still got a couple of days going through. Coach and I haven't sat down and gone through the final board yet.
Dude just ripped ass.
I tried so hard. I didn't want to listen to it. I don't know why, but it grosses me out. And I saw it. I had seen that the afternoon show spent a good chunk of my on this. I saw little clips of it across my feed all weekend, and I didn't want to listen to it. But that was pretty bad, man. That wasn't. Oh, he should have. Don't say excuse me when you're on microphone. That can easily be excused as like the leather on your chair or something.
Right. You know? And this happened to Orlovsky like a week or two ago. Orlovsky was on McAfee.
Yeah.
And he was on a Zoom like from his car. Yeah. And I guess it sound. I'm like you, Seth. Like, I don't like watching those or whatever. I'm only playing this because he acknowledged it and said, excuse me. It's hilarious to me.
Well, yeah, because Orlovsky blamed a windshield wiper.
Orlovsky blamed a windshield wiper. That's exactly
right. But there was no evidence. Like, I watched that one a few times, and like, it never looked like the windshield wipers were on.
No.
So I did.
So, Trent Baalke, man, just It's draft's a tough time, man. He doesn't get to hit the restroom enough, you know?
He's probably eating Taco Bell.
Yeah.
They Uber Eats it.
A lot of fast food. Ryan Garcia.
Acknowledge me.
I did not see this fight on Saturday. I just saw the reaction to it. A full confession, I'm not a huge boxing guy. I don't go out of my way to watch big fights on Saturday night. But we've had multiple people text in saying, you're going to acknowledge Ryan Garcia? He was in the rundown. Don't worry. This is not me pandering to you, texters. Won the lightweight title in a huge upset on Saturday of Devin Haney. My two most fun takeaways from this fight, because I didn't see the fight, but apparently this is the fight that's going to put boxing back on the map. I have no idea. But CJ Stroud had all the boys over for this fight. It was on Instagram. He Instagram lived him and all the fellas and kind of panned around the room. So that was good to see. Like, CJ is still doing his thing where he's sort of the go-to house for all the big parties and stuff. I like that. Number two, this was a major upset. Like, Ryan Garcia was like a 20 or 25 to 1 underdog and won this thing.
Yeah.
LeSean McCoy, former NFL running back, decided to bet the favorite in this one. And the favorite, Devin Haney, was minus 1,000 to win the fight. So Garcia couldn't have been 20 to 1. He was a big underdog, though. But anyways, Shady McCoy bet Devin Haney at minus 1,000. He bet $250,000 to win $25,000.
Oh, man.
And he lost. Yeah, man.
Oh, he could have. Does he know what interest rates are right now? Like,
no. Bro, put it in a CD.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Ryan Garcia's dad went off on Eddie Hearn, the promoter, after the... Did you see this?
I saw the video.
I didn't think it was worth playing the audio because you couldn't hear most of it, and the stuff you could hear would have been bleeped out. But he's like... Ryan Garcia's walking past Eddie Hearn and just starts, laying into him about something Eddie Hearn had said before the fight or something. And Eddie Hearn was like, I just said nice stuff about Ryan, your son... And then his dad, Ryan Garcia's dad, to his credit, after dropping about 20 F-bombs in 17
grabbing
seconds,
his crotch.
Came back and apologized to Eddie Hearn on camera.
Right there. That's where I saw. I didn't listen to it. I saw it because I saw the people tweeting going, this is how grown men should squash their beefs. That was cool. I saw the tweet. And I saw Ryan Garcia's dad walking past and gesticulating the way that he was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only a 39-second video. And 18 seconds in, he's still grabbing his crotch. I'm like, this makeup is going to have to take place awfully quickly here. He squashed it quick.
Extremely volatile.
20 seconds.
Yeah. Wild, Ryan Garcia's dad was just in that moment. Yeah. Probably all pumped up. Whenever you watch a family member do anything... wrestling or anything, MMA, boxing, anything like that, it's a whole different level of emotion.
Dude.
It does. It feels like you're, it's weird. It feels like you're in the fight.
Oh, yeah. The adrenaline, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. Last one, Pete Fairbanks.
Acknowledge me!
He's the closer for the Tampa Bay Rays, and after he blew a save last week against the Angels, he gave up two runs in the ninth in a 5-4 loss. He coined a new phrase that I think we may need to put on the whiteboard here to use. We may need to use it for the Astros at some point here. But here was Pete Fairbanks acknowledging his own performance, his sucky performance against the Angels.
Was it just a matter of command, location, selection, anything specific?
No, I thought it generally sucked. I didn't think it was a specific suck. I thought it was an all-encompassing type of suck. So... we're going to try and rectify that, but for right now, I'm going to be pretty pissed about it.
Pete, where do you kind of go from here? Is it looking at tape? Is it going through mechanics? Where do you kind of go from here?
You tell me. I've tried that. If you got an answer, I'd love to hear. Just, not going to let it beat me up for, I'll maybe give it till 10. It's 9:44 right now. We'll give it 16 minutes of sulk, and then we'll, get back on the bump and figure it out.
All-encompassing suck. That's a great phrase. Wasn't any one kind of suck. It was an all-encompassing suck.
I actually felt like that wasn't a completely passive aggressive ask for a request for advice. I think he actually would have. I think if anybody there in the press corps had like a suggestion or something, I feel like he might have actually taken.
He looked
it,
like know? He was swimming a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, like he just like, oh, I don't know, mechanics, whatever. I don't know. You got a suggestion?
You got anything, Jenkins? Yeah.
I think he probably he meant it passive aggressively, and yet. He probably would have taken the suggestion or advice. You're like, funny. Yeah, it's just good. If somebody had said something, yeah. I'm guessing he would have said, yeah, we'll take a look at it. Yep. I don't have a clue.
We got a text message here. Glad I can hear you guys loud and clear in Lake Jackson, Texas now. You know what? I'm going to acknowledge our new tower here at Sports Radio 610, our new revamped tower. For those of you, our boss came on the afternoon show on Friday and acknowledged what some of you have been feeling the last few months, that the signal has been subpar for the last few months. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
And tower's all fixed as of Friday. Back at 100%. Yes.
It is spewing out awesome radio content.
That's right. Yes. That's right.
Did we actually get a new... The tower is still the same. It's just all the transmitter and
they
everything.
They had to move
right?
it.
It's updated.
Yeah, they had to move the tower?
Yeah,
they had to move it, I think. I believe so.
Like a lot? Like a long distance? Or
I don't
just
know.
A few feet or something?
I don't know. You're asking the wrong guy those questions. I just know it works a whole lot better now.
I know that a lot of people that work for us on the technical side of things have had to like actually be out there, climbing stuff and everything for a long time.
Yes, yeah. yes. So
They've been working double duty. So thank you for the hero's effort. They've been working double duty, and then like it sounds like it's one of those things where they do something the way they were told to do it, and then all of a sudden they're like, you know what?
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe we should actually tweak it up. It sounded a lot like they just spent 9 months with their wife telling them to adjust a picture they had just hung.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again. You know, like, you know what, actually, I think it's a little bit better to the left. Is there a stud there?
Yeah.
Is there a stud 3 inches to the left?
Right.
Like, no, there's
And imagine
there's
doing that for 9 months. Yeah. I don't know if it was 9 months, but it was a few months. It was longer than it should have been, and now we're back. We're back, baby. So if you stuck with us through a couple things. If you stuck with us through that, thank you. If you know people that didn't, or you want to tell a friend, tell them. The water's warm again here. You can come back in. Number three, and this always goes for good signal, bad signal, no signal, especially no signal, download the Odyssey app. You can listen to us and stream us and rewind us. If you just tuned in now and you missed Acknowledge Me, you can bump back on the app. So download the Odyssey app. That's a great way to listen to it as well. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Monday. All right, Jose Abreu. Where are we at right now with the clock ticking on this thing? A poll on Twitter deemed the official petition on use of Jose Abreu moving forward. And the solution that all of you wanted looks like the clock may have struck midnight, at least temporarily on that. We'll get to that coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a... on a Monday, okay. Hey, Ben, since we changed the clock around, be sure, don't be bashful about telling me to get out at 7:55 or whatever, okay? All right, just probably should have said that off the air. But I say that
we'll
because
say it.
But we have listeners that tune in at this time and are expecting us to go for like the next 35 minutes. We have moved the long segment to earlier in the 7 o'clock hour. So just, you know, those of you in your car. So Michael Schwab, who is a good Astro follow on Twitter, he's got some good information. He broke one of the recent stories. I'm trying to remember which one it was. Michael, if you're listening, I apologize. It's something to do with the pitching staff. I forget which one it was, but he posted. He's got 6,500 votes on this bad boy. Boy, Astro fans are passionate online. I tell you, says this is the official petition, and this is from Friday night, the official petition by Astro fans. He said he's going to keep it open for a week. Vote below. So it's still open if you want to go have your voice heard. Should Jose Abreu start for the Astros anymore? Take a guess, Seth. What percentage of Astro fans say no, Jose Abreu should not start for the Astros again in his life?
I'd say 78% say no.
90.6% say no. 90.6 out of 60, nearly 6,600 votes say no, Jose Abreu should not. So here's the problem. If he doesn't start for the Astros, my follow-up question is, okay, well, what does he do now? He's not good at anything.
Right. So he's not, like, certainly he's not your DH, obviously.
Right.
I guess the other question, though, too, is, all right, then who? Is it going to be one of your catchers? Are you gonna rotate your catchers, but on their off nights they're playing first base? Possibly. I don't know. Is it Greg Kessinger? It's not John Singleton. Is it Loper Fido? Is it as simple as that?
Long term it's not John Singleton, but John Singleton is a better solution than Jose Abreu right now. Like John Singleton, if these are who your first basemen are, unless to your point you're gonna convert one of your catchers into a part time first baseman, then John Singleton should be the one playing two nights and Abreu one night, if that's kind of the split that we're doing here right now. I can't even sit here and say, well, go lefty-righty with the two of them. They're both bad. Like, it's, you know, like there's no metric where I'm like, oh, yeah, that guy should definitely be starting in this situation. I just know Singleton is a better hitter than Jose Abreu because literally every other hitter in Major League Baseball is better than Jose Abreu.
Right. Singleton's got like a 593 OPS right now. Like, he's bad, but Abreu is worse than baseball.
He's a corpse. Abreu's a corpse. Yeah.
I mean, now with Singleton, with everyday usage, would he be better or would he be more exposed or whatever it might be? There's just no perfect solution right now. And Loper Fido seems to have come back down to earth a little bit over these past few games.
Yeah, that's the other thing I wanted to make sure people knew about so we can brighten up your Monday for you here. Loper Fido, who everybody was clamoring for, what, a week or two ago when he was the minor league player of the week? Remember, he hit like six home runs, hit three home runs in a game, including a grand slam. Loper Fido is one for his last 20 at-bats with seven strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
And then the strikeouts are the big thing. Like, you can go one for 20 and you can have some bad luck and some good at-bats, but boy, seven strikeouts and 20 at-bats, that is a lot.
Well, and the strikeouts aren't any different. You know, he's been striking out at a ridiculous pace, even as he was hitting all those home runs, which is the biggest obstacle for him coming up to the majors would be that, like, okay, well, wait a second. If he can't identify a curveball in the minors, then it's not going to be any better when you get up to the majors. He needs a little bit more polish. For a guy that's just kind of been on a meteoric rise to begin with and has introduced power into his game more so than people expected, he still needs more polish. I don't need him to relive the young John Singleton experience.
Right.
You know, he comes up to the majors and he can't hack it, goes back out to AAA and he's killing it. Like, you got to be sure you got him at the right moment when you bring him up.
Yeah, and Dana Brown has kind of, I mean, Dana Brown on the pregame show for one of the Astro games this weekend, I mean, kind of did sort of acknowledge, like, yeah, we can't play it because it's Astros radio. We're not the flagship. Yeah. We can't play it. But I've got the quote here from Dana Brown. Like, this is sort of the first quote that I've heard from anybody in a position of power with the Astros that acknowledges, like, okay, like, he's, you know, didn't totally say he may need to go, but did say, like, he may need to sit, like, for a while. Like, none of this, like, playing four or five games a week kind of thing. Here's what he said. Listen, there's no way to sugarcoat this. He's scuffling right now. I think he knows it. It's wearing on him. Sure, it's wearing on our hitting coaches. The frustration mounts, but ultimately, hopefully, he can turn this thing around. I think we're going to have to give him some time off, maybe platoon a little bit, to see if one of the other guys can get hot and give him some time off. Maybe he can catch fire after a few days off. It's tough to watch when you see him go through these struggles because you know he's such a gamer and he's a competitor. To start off the way he's starting off now, it's frustrating. I guarantee you he's frustrated, but he's got to climb out of it or else we're going to have to mix and match because it's tough to keep going in that direction, end quote. That's Dana Brown, the GM of the Astros. So nowhere in there does he say, you know, like, I'm reading this thing, Seth, and at the end he's going, he better climb out of it or else, and I'm hoping to read, we got to let him go. We need to eject from this. And he's like, we're going to have to mix and match because it's tough to keep going in that direction. So Dana Brown's kind of tippy-toeing around it a little bit. Like, this is the first, to me, clear message from anybody in a position of influence with the Astros, whether it's Jim Crane, Jeff Bagwell, Joe Espada, all of whom love to talk about the back of the baseball card. Dana Brown ain't acknowledging the back of the baseball card. There's no scraps in Dana Brown's scrapbook when it comes to this. Like, we need to sit this guy And I like to think in Dana Brown's mind, like, that sitting him, or at the very least truly platooning him, not one of these things where Singleton starts every 3 or 4 days,
yeah,
is the first step to having some tough conversations with Jim Crane about this whole thing.
You can't fall into a situation. Basically, you know, the analogy everybody always makes was Dan Quinn's last few years in Atlanta to Jose Abreu. Like, Dan, that's obviously not the analogy, but, like, remember Dan Quinn would, like, they'd make these late pushes. They looked like they were just an awful team, and then all of a sudden they'd have a late push in the second half of the year, and they'd be above 500, and it wouldn't be, you couldn't fire Dan Quinn just yet. That's what Abreu did last year. Like, he came along, and he was really good in September and October. But he's 1 year older now, and he's even worse now than he was at the beginning of last year.
Yeah.
You can't live that way. At some point, yeah, people get old and they're not good at baseball anymore. And there's like in my mind, it's 97% a certainty now that that's what's happened to Abreu. He's perfectly capable of having a little push here or there. And that can be the most damaging thing in the world if he has one good month. And you think, like, oh, yeah, look at this. Mm-hmm. Same as it ever was. He's back to the old Jose Abreu.
A lot of people weighing in on this. Let's see here. I don't care. Okay, this is a big one, too. 3-7-3-2. I don't care if Singleton can hit. The ball stays in his glove when it's hit towards him. Yeah, see, it's being compounded right now. He has as many errors as he has hits.
Dude, he did that one. Was it on Friday when he had that nice over-the-shoulder catch? But it was a dicey looking one, and he looked kind of calm, cool, and casual.
Yeah.
You know, he was turned away. The shadows were all weird in Washington every single game this series, and it just dropped in without him even looking at it. And you're like, oh, that would be kind of impressive if it were any other player but him. Because later in the series, he would just completely lose sight of the ball.
Same exact play.
Altuve nowhere to be seen on a blustery day to where maybe you could back him up a little bit or anything. Altuve not a mastermind on the base pass yet again over this past week, and then not necessarily always helping out that much in the field either. Like, it's so much stupid stuff out there right now.
Yeah, it's really bad.
And yeah, Abreu is amongst the most. Abreu making error after error after error, including I'm excusing him for that Thursday weird bounce that he took at first base. But like
well,
I,
you're talking
I went
about
back
when Pena made the play and bounced it to first base on the throw, right? Is that the play?
No, the line drive.
Oh,
it took a weird bounce.
The weird hop. Yeah.
That we were kind of crushing him for.
Yeah.
That was That was on Wednesday.
I forgot.
It was Wednesday. Then on Thursday we crushed him for, and then I came in Friday. Said, you know what? I watched it again,
That's
and it
right.
wasn't that part wasn't as bad. But he's got plenty of other errors. Everybody, don't worry.
I mean, yeah, he's got some plays that have not counted as errors for him that I just feel a better first baseman would have helped out his teammates on. You know, like it's if you're batting .068, you better be a combination of Keith Hernandez and Yuli Gurriel in the field. You know what I mean? Like you better be the greatest first baseman of all time fielding wise. He's the worst first baseman in baseball defensively as well. Well, like he's horrible.
You remember 3, 4, 5 years ago, whenever it was, when Altuve was having a little bit of a difficulty throwing to first. And remember, everybody breathed a sigh of relief when
COVID
he made a couple of outs.
Yeah.
But do you remember? Oh, it was COVID. You remember? Remember that he actually had a couple dicey throws to first, and Pena bailed him out. Like
Pena or Gurriel, you mean?
Or Gurriel. Gurriel, sorry. Yuli Gurriel bailed him out. And I'm doing the old Pena, La Pena.
Yeah.
So, like, if it hadn't been for Gurriel, it might have been a bigger story than it actually was.
Yeah.
But, like, the level of cut. So it was nice for Altuve to have the confidence that he could just throw it into the ocean surrounding Gurriel and it would be all right.
It's
yeah.
Like throw into DeAndre Hopkins, man. Like, just throw it somewhere in the catch radius and you know he's going to come up with it, sort of thing. Yuli was D Hop. He had a big catch radius over there. At first base.
La Pena
and Jeremy Pena.
All my Spanish has gone out the window ever since Gurriel left. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks,
Gurriel. Another way Abreu has screwed me over.
Someone asked, like, how's Yuli doing? Lou asked on the text page, how's Yuli doing? He hit a home run this weekend for a Atlanta minor league team. I know that. Because anything good Yuli does pops up on Twitter now amongst Astro fans.
And how would Abreu do in Double A right now, do you think?
He's washed. He'd be horrible at every level. That's my prediction. We won't find out, but that's my prediction.
They should. What if Dana Brown really just if Dana Brown's taking this opportunity to be like, hey, that was not my deal.
Yeah.
Like, just go ahead and send him down to single A.
That's the part I feel worst about for Dana Brown. I'm like, Bagwell should be answering all these questions about Abreu, not Dana Brown. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Up next, the 8 at 8 headlines, the Oat Show. We'll get you 8 of them coming up next. Stay there.
Hey, everyone. Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us, and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.